You're listening to TheStreet.com's Real Story. Visit anytime for this and our other multimedia products.
The economy added 216,000 jobs in March, and that sent the unemployment rate down and stocks up. Welcome to The Real Story, the show we go beyond the headlines, say what's really happening on Wall Street. I'm Greg Greenberg, and today is April 1st, and let's get to the numbers. The Dow was up 55 points to 12,375. It was up 1.3% for the week. S&P up 6.5 points to 1,332. NAS up 8.5 to 2,790. Gold down $11.20 to $1,427.70. Oil was up $1.40 a barrel to $108.12 a barrel. Still didn't hold back stocks, though. As for the 10-year, it finished at 3.45 on the week. All right, the New York Stock Exchange, NYX, that was up 12.6% today. They're going to get a rival bid from the NASDAQ and the ICE. Deutsche Börse was trying to buy it, and now we have a bidder, so we're going to see what happens there. As for GM, that stock was up 4.5%. They had some sales that were up 10% in March, which was good to hear. Stock finished at $32.41. In terms of most actives, Citigroup was up to $4.45. Bank of America up slightly to $13.37. Ford, they actually sold more cars than GM, up 16% in terms of sales for March. That stock finished at $15.13, and GE finished at $20.34. Over in the NASDAQ, your most actives were Microsoft, which was flat or unch, as they say on Wall Street, at $25.39. Intel down slightly to $19.61, and Cisco down slightly to $17.03. When are we going to see that 16 handle on Cisco? The transports hit a new all-time high, which is good to see. It's a good indicator for the market. And FedEx was up 1.5% on an upgrade at Morgan Stanley. That's also a good indicator for stocks. All right, great show on The Real Story today. I speak to Peter Leeds. He wrote the book Invest in Penny Stocks. We talk about some of his favorite penny stocks. I speak to Brian Ashenberg. He runs the Breakout Stocks portfolio. We talk about used car sellers. Very interesting. And then finally, I speak to Steve Cucchiaro. He's the CIO of Schwab's Windhaven Investment Management. We talk about some brand new funds that he runs. All right. Thank God it's Friday. And it was a pretty good week in the market. What did I say? The Dow was up at 1.3% for the week. Had a good jobs number today. 216,000 jobs added in March. It's a little bit above the market's expectations. Overall, the jobless rate was down a tenth of a percentage point to 8.8%. A little bit of a problem with the numbers, however, because hourly earnings dipped slightly, which indicates there's still some slack in the labor market. So we're going to see about QE2. It's still on the table, although Ben Bernanke says it's not. But maybe we're not going to see rates rise too quickly if there's still that slack in the job market. Anyway, it was still a good jobs number, so that helped out stocks. Even though oil was at $108 a barrel, over $108 a barrel, you'd think that would slow down stocks, but it did not. Société Générale, they had a note out about the jobs number. Everyone was talking about it. Over on CNBC, they're still talking about that Buffett-David Sokol resignation. They're still trying to milk that because they had him on yesterday. They had the key interview. They had the story there. They're milking that, even though a lot of people have moved on already. But anyway, as for Société Générale, or SocGen, here's what they wrote. They said, from the Fed standpoint, the report does not have enough juice to change the minds of the more dovish officials. The Fed needs to see sustained improvement on employment and evidence of price pressures reaffirmed in wages. Wage growth has flattened out over the past few months, suggesting that any price pressure in the economy are not yet deeply rooted. So QE3 is not out of the question. But a rate hike by the end of 2011, well, got to see more for that. If we're going to get that, we've got to see a little bit more. Yes, it's true. We need higher wages. Come on, let's see some higher wages. And that should start right here at home. As for the ISM Manufacturing Index, that also came out today. Hit expectations. All right, big news in terms of stocks, away from the big macro stuff. You had NASDAQ and the Intercontinental Exchange, the ICE. They're going after the NYSE Euronext. And they want to top Deutsche Börse's offer by about 19%. NASDAQ was up, the stock was up 9.3% today to 28.24. ICE was down 3% to 119.75. Here's what NASDAQ CEO Robert Greifeld said. The combination of the two leading U.S. exchanges delivers an opportunity to build a global exchange platform that has the scale and growth potential to benefit investors issuers, and other market participants. He says, we believe it would increase transparency and liquidity in U.S. markets and create jobs as new companies raise capital. Well, I don't know about the job creation, because one of the points for both these takeovers would be that you need synergies, and synergies means a lot of job elimination. Greifeld, you know, he and Niederauer have a competition going on. Duncan Niederauer, who's the CEO of the NYSE across the street, they got a little bit of a rivalry going on. So if Greifeld comes in and they actually win this bid, because it's the higher bid, then Niederauer would probably not be sticking around. But I think he's got a pretty good parachute there, which is obscene, because think about how much money he makes for running the exchange. It's way too much. For some reason, going back to Grasso, the exchange is some kind of piggy bank. I mean, it's constantly losing people on the floor. It's losing, you know, it's losing its prestige, which is why it's getting purchased in the first place. But for some reason, they like to pay the executives very well. John Thain was there for a little bit, and he got a nice payout before jumping to, where did he go? CIT, right? He's supposedly turning that place around. These guys just keep getting the big payouts wherever they go. It just ain't fair. And speaking of big payouts, you got to love a segue when it's there. There was a report on Dealbreaker, which talked about the rankings in AR Magazine of the top best paid hedge fund managers. So here's the hedge fund managers that made the most in 2010. We'll start off with number 10. Paul Tudor Jones made $440 million. George Soros, $450 million. Bruce Kovner over Caxton, $640 million. Carl Icahn made $900 million in 2010. Eddie Lampert made $1.1 billion in 2010, and people are deriding that Sears investment still. Stevie Cohen over at SAC Capital, he finished up $1.3 billion in 2010, number five on the list. David Tepper, who made that big call to buy everything earlier this year, the David Tepper rally, which I guess we're still in, he made $2.2 billion, plus he saw his Steelers go to the Super Bowl. Jim Simons, big chain smoker, gives a lot of money to Stony Brook University, does all that mathematical, quantitative investing. At Renaissance Technologies, he made $2.5 billion. Ray Dalio, Bridgewater Associates, made $3.1 billion. People say he's got a wacky thing going on, a lot of rules where he works. And then John Paulson made $4.9 billion. He was big on gold. And if you remember, he made the greatest trade ever, according to Greg Zuckerman in his great book. And a lot of people say, well, it was fixed because he had Goldman Sachs on his side and the fabulous Fab Touré. Well, maybe he is that good, right? He had another good year in 2010. Now, as I said at the top of the show, FedEx got a nice upgrade over at Morgan Stanley. That helped that stock move, and that's an indicator for the economy. Morgan Stanley analyst William J. Green expects FedEx, ticker FDX, stock to hit $135 to $140 per share by May 2013. Company's entering, quote, another multi-year growth cycle. Wow, you know, this. With oil at $108, usually these stocks get hammered. People want to downgrade them over higher oil. I guess people now are saying that, look, you have the wall of worry is so high and all these bad things keep happening that sooner or later we're going to get some good news and you take those away, and these stocks are really going to rise. So it's amazing how Wall Street can turn things on its head. You know, let's get to the first interview, because it was a good day in the market despite higher oil. We had Peter Leeds. He was the author of the book, Invest in Penny Stocks. And I love the penny stocks, right? A lot of people say they're really dangerous, but I think if you do your research, you go out there and you dig, and you really got to dig with the penny stocks, because they are volatile, because you don't know what's behind them, whether or not it's a manipulator somewhere in a boiler room in New York or Colts Neck, New Jersey, or a pump and dump scam. You got to be real careful, whether or not it's a Chinese reverse merger, if you will. So you got to be real careful. But if you are careful and you do your homework, one of these penny stocks might really turn out to be a good deal, right? If you do your homework, like everyone says, then you can make some serious money. First thing I want to find out from Peter Leeds is, though, why penny stocks? Why does he like them so much? Aren't they dangerous?
Most of them are dangerous. We find that about 95% of penny stocks don't make our cut. But if you find the 5% that do pass Leeds analysis, then they're actually great companies with excellent upside and good management teams, good revenues, and they should be pretty profitable.
Tell me about Leeds analysis. What do you look for in a penny stock?
Well, Leeds analysis is divided into about 80% fundamental analysis, 10% technical analysis, where we try and get a good buy price on a stock, and about 10% third-level analysis, which is where we take a look at their marketing, branding, and positioning to see if they have competitive advantages over their competition.
All right, let's talk about some stocks that you're looking at. One of them is Denison Mines. This is ticker DNN in the uranium business. Why do I want to be in the uranium business right now?
Well, Denison Mines, along with just about every other uranium producer, has been, in our opinion, unfairly treated because of reaction to what's going on in Japan with their nuclear reactor. The thing is, though, that we think that selling has been overdone. We think that there's been a little bit of panicking among investors, and they're not looking forward enough. We think that uranium's not going anywhere. We think nuclear power is not going anywhere. You know, China has 30 nuclear power plants under construction as we speak to add on to their other 10. And Japan has even come out and said that this latest disaster is not going to derail their nuclear program. So we think that these companies come back, and we think that uranium is going to keep on doing better as it comes more, in more demand.
All right. A lot of the Chinese small-cap stocks have been hurt recently because of all the revelations about this the reverse mergers out there. One stock in your portfolio is Tianli Agritech. The ticker is OINK, O-I-N-K. Tell me why I should like this one. Is it a reverse merger?
No.
Okay, so it's a straight-up play. So tell me why I like Tianli.
Well, they are a hog producer in China. They've got about, you know, pretty good books. The books are strong. They got 10 million cash, a million debt. And they've, you know, China is the world's largest hog producer and the world's largest hog consumer. We're talking about 600 million pigs a year are being eaten in China. That's 65% of their meat consumption. But right now, it's a very fragmented industry. So you've got a lot of these farms that are, you know, selling 10 hogs a year, maybe 100 hogs a year. But Tianli Agritech is one of the only super farms where they're selling millions of hogs a year, and they're actually in a very fragmented industry, but they're consolidating that. They've got, you know, 10 farms so far. They just acquired an 11th, and they're going to keep on growing to feed the increasing meat needs of the Chinese people.
All right, what about S&W Seed Company? This is ticker S-A-N-W.
Well, Greg, we think that food is one of the you know, the up-and-coming new hot industries. There's a lot of food prices are getting higher. There's a lot of demand without a lot of supply. S&W Seed Company is they make hardy, high-yield alfalfa, which means that it can survive different genetic varieties, can survive in very hot conditions, very cold conditions, arid, salty soil, etc. So they've got these seeds that are in high demand, especially, you know, about 50% of what they're selling is going to the Middle East and Latin America, and they're you know, creating and collecting all this in California, selling it worldwide, and helping these companies, these countries, for example, in the Middle East, to meet their needs for their reliance for the imports of crops. And we think that this company's got one way to go. We've got a price target of $8.65 on it. It's trading at $3.65 right now.
When you're looking at these penny stocks, do you look for a certain amount of liquidity? And also, do you look for who the insiders are, what investment bank brought them public? Because a lot of times you get clues when you look at these things as to, you know, which, I know I'm talking about a hog stock, but which stocks are kosher and which stocks are treif or not kosher.
Exactly. Well, it would depend on each individual company and the industry that they are in. We try and look at, with Leeds analysis, I said earlier, was 80% fundamental analysis. That's the kinds of things that we are looking for. It's not just the balance sheet and the income statement. We're looking at who's running the company, what they've done before, where we think this industry is going in the future. And that's just a big part of our analysis. We try, you know, the bigger something is, the more it takes to move it. Transversely, the smaller something is, such as some of these penny stocks, it doesn't take a lot to derail the company. So if you're talking about a lawsuit or they lose one particularly important client, they can really derail a stock price. So we need to be diligent and look at just about every aspect of these companies we look into before we put them in front of the eyes of our subscribers.
Peter Leeds, the book is Invest in Penny Stocks. Thanks for coming on The Real Story.
My pleasure, Greg.
All right, let's run through some stock stories before the next interview. Las Vegas Sands was up 3.3% today to $43.63. Now, this stock's been getting hammered of late because you have not only the SEC looking into them about paying off foreign officials to do business, but now the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission is looking into them for paying off people. I'm pretty sure that's just the cost of business doing over there. And Stifel Nicolaus analyst Brad Boyer says the shares have fallen too far. It's the best way to play the Chinese gaming. And look, They even if they did bribe their way in, they're just going to bribe their way out. I'm not saying they did, but that's probably what's going to happen in the end, right? You pay a fine and you deny nothing, right? What's the term on Wall Street when they pay the fine with basically saying that they're pleading guilty or not guilty? It doesn't matter. I'll come up with it later. Anyway, American Apparel. This is a sad story. Down 8.7% today to 88 cents. They might have to go bankrupt. They got a cash shortage going on. And sad for Dove Charney, but to a certain extent, he did it to himself with a lot of silly sexual lawsuits. I mean, they were trying to do good things, make the merchandise here, but then they got busted during an immigration sting. And, you know, it was a good idea to try and do things in America. And it just went awry. Although I think Dove is Canadian. Motorola Mobility up 0.4% to $24.50. RBC Capital Markets analyst Mark Sue. There you have it, a boy named Sue. Johnny Cash. He cut his price target on the shares to 33 from 38. He says that the company's not seeing the bounce from the Zoom tablet that he was hoping for. And Facebook fired a staffer for insider trading on the secondary market. This came from TechCrunch. This is interesting. This is according to TechCrunch's Sarah Lacey and Michael Arrington. In a public company, this would almost certainly violate a number of federal laws. However, say sources, the fact that Facebook is not technically a publicly traded company means that those laws don't apply. And this guy's actions did violate Facebook's own insider trading policies, say sources, and he was terminated by Facebook for those violations. The executive's name is Michael Brown. He bought shares in the company stock just before a $1.5 billion private placement by Goldman Sachs in January. Goldman Sachs just can't get out of its own way on this Facebook deal, can they? Right? They were supposed to be able to sell them to U.S.-based investors. Then they said no, they were going to sell them to foreign investors. Now you have insider trading. Then you have the insider trading scandal going on with Rajaratnam, and Lloyd Blankfein is testifying. And they were actually cut out of a very big deal recently, which JP Morgan got the biz. I can't remember what it was, but it was interesting. And all the prop traders are leaving. I think they even got a downgrade recently at Goldman Sachs. I'm pretty sure they did. It's tough being at Goldman Sachs nowadays, right? My heart goes out to them. All right, I said at the top of the show we had some auto sales come in. Ford, which is the most profitable of the Detroit car makers, in 2010 said its sales rose 16% in March from a year ago, sold 212,1777 vehicles, 6,156 more than GM, which had a 10% increase in sales. Chrysler had a 31% increase, which was the best it's done in 3 years. Hyundai had a 32% jump. Now, Hyundai's really been knocking the cover off the proverbial ball since yesterday was opening day for the Yanks. I'm going to have some baseball analogies, right? Had Bill White on yesterday. Tonight, the Mets open up. My poor, poor Mets. Hopefully, you enjoyed that Bill White interview yesterday. So, that was a good one. Let's see. Nissan, their factories in Japan were shut down for most of the month. Said its sales had a 27% increase. Toyota said its sales fell 6% from a year ago. Tough times still at Toyota. All right, F5 networks were down 9% to $93.56. William Blair's Jason Ader, he reiterated a market perform rating on the stock. He says that the street's estimates are going to have to come down on this high flyer. He thinks they're going to miss revenue projections for its March quarter by about $5 million to $10 million and offer a weak forecast. He says the company's got to get back on track. And then finally, RIM was down 0.9% to 56.04. Morgan Keegan analyst Tavis McCourt, he reiterated an outperform rating on the stock, says he's been digging through the annual report, which was filed this week, and he says he's seeing a substantial increase in purchase obligations. Now, there was a critical report yesterday by, I think it was UBS. So everyone's on either side of RIM. You have people on either side of all the chip companies. My head is spinning. But you know who usually sorts out my head, straightens it out when it's spinning? Is Brian Aschenberg, because he's a level-headed guy, right? His head is on correctly. He runs the breakout stocks portfolio right here at the street. We got first quarter earnings coming up, right? Today's April Fool's Day, April 1st. Pretty soon we're going to see Alcoa, and the whole thing kicks off again. We're going to see how we did for the first quarter. And I wanted to get his expectations and then some of his breakout stock.
I actually think that this is a critical earnings period, and truthfully, most of them are. but we're at a very interesting juncture right here. The market's had a really good run, and we need continued bullish tones from management teams to keep this run going. It can't be about cost-cutting. It needs to be about growth. We need to see that businesses aren't being adversely affected by the disasters in Japan, and we need to know that the sustainability of earnings is there. So that's what I'm looking to see.
And you think this is also going to feed into Ben Bernanke's decision about QE2 this summer, whether or not this is going to be the last QE he's going to put out there?
I do think so. I do think that's exactly it. And right, and these management teams are going to give Mr. Bernanke the inside track on what they actually think their businesses are going to do, on what they actually think the economy is going to do.
Well, you know, he certainly watches the stock market, because he said so in the past. A lot of the aim of this whole QE2 of buying bonds to keep rates low is to pump up stocks to make people feel wealthier. So let's see if we can make people feel a little bit wealthier with some good stock picks.
Not only does he watch the stock market, from what I understand, is that he listens to your program every day.
Oh, they all do out there. Let's talk about some stocks. You're looking BE Aerospace. Tell me why people would want to own or avoid BEAV.
It's actually my favorite pick right now. It's really been underperforming the market. It's down about 5% since they reported in early February versus a 5% increase for the Russell 2000. But I think that the market's got it wrong. What they do is they make, they are playing the commercial aerospace market. They make interior products like seats and things for the galley. And they also do consumables business, which is like the wear and tear on planes. They provide fasteners and the parts for airplanes. So they benefit from both new builds for airplanes as well as retrofits. And obviously, the stock's being punished because oil's up. People are worried that the airlines are done spending. And I think that that is not a correct conclusion. In fact, Goldman Sachs earlier this week talked about airline profitability still being strong despite the increase in oil, and they're pushing through price increases to offset some of that cost. And again, these guys are profitable for the first time in years. They're going to spend the new planes.
Do we know when we're going to hear from them? Are they going to be reporting in the next few weeks?
Yeah, they should be reporting let's think about this. No, not in the next few weeks.
All right, well, we'll keep a lookout for BE Aerospace. We talked about planes. Let's talk about, we'll skip trains and talk about automobiles. You're watching the used car sector. Tell me why.
Well, my thesis, I've been scouring the universe for a good used car stock. Surprisingly, I haven't really been successful in identifying one yet. But my thesis is simple. It's the fact that new car dealers are getting less supply. Supply, again, the disruptions out of Japan is negatively affecting their ability to get cars, both for Japanese nameplates as well as domestic nameplates. And I was reading this article that said that one of these dealers told their lot managers to go out and buy an additional 200 used cars because he wants to make sure that whoever walks onto his lot doesn't walk off empty-handed. I thought that was really interesting, that it's going to create more demand for used cars. And obviously that does a couple things. That makes used car pricing goes higher. So it's trying to figure out who could benefit from that. And any used car dealer obviously benefits from having more sales, but also benefits that the value of their lot or the value of their inventory goes up dramatically when used car prices go up. So I was trying to play that, and there are a ton of players. But the problem is that many of them also have new car exposure. And then we're running into the same problem. So what might be good for half of the company's revenues might be bad for the other half of the company's revenues. There are a couple of smaller pure plays. They also do a lot of the subprime financing themselves. I'm not looking to get involved there. So I'm looking now at the auction houses. I'm looking at Copart and CAR, K-A-R, to see whether or not those might be appropriate opportunities.
I like it. A lot of good out-of-the-box thinking there. Thank you very much, Brian Aschenberg. Runs the Breakout Stocks portfolio right here at the street.
Thank you.
Email me at Greg, G-R-E-G-G, .Greenberg@thestreet.com. Or you can go to the Facebook site, or you can go to the iTunes site and leave me a message there. Also, like I said yesterday, I have a surplus of books under my desk. And if you email me with the name of one of your favorite guests that appeared right here in the Real Story Show. I will send you a book, so send me your address as well. Make it, you know, one that's been on not just today's show, but you can dig back a little bit. And also, you know something? Also, if you send me the name of your favorite Replacement song, then I'll also send you a book. The Mats were a great band. I've been listening to more Replacements lately. All right, last interview of the day. I had Steve Cucchiero. He's the chief investment officer of Schwab's Windhaven Investment Management. And he's been running the Windhaven for a while. They got three different separate account funds. But Schwab recently did a deal with them, so he's working with and for Schwab now. And he's a mathematician. This guy's, you know, unlike a lot of trade from the gut mutual fund managers and traders I speak to here in the street, this guy really, he knows his way around a mathematical model. And I want to find out a little bit more about Windhaven, the different portfolios that they offer. So I asked him. I said, tell me about Windhaven, what you do. And then we got into a little bit more, and we broke down where he sees some value in the market.
Well, Windhaven, we have an investment philosophy that says that we want to play offense and defense at the same time. We pick what we think are the most attractive asset classes globally around the world. We build a part of the portfolio based on what we think are the asset classes that are going to have the best risk-adjusted return over the next several months, given our analysis of the economic, fundamental, and invest behavioral factors. Then we also play defense. We think of all the risky scenarios that can happen in the world. What happens if inflation flares up? What happens if the dollar crashes? What happens if the terrorists blow up the Saudi oil fields? What happens if we get back to deflation? We put together, as part of the portfolio, a set of exposures to make sure that we can protect on the downside. We have something in that portfolio going up. Everything is done using asset classes, and the way we put money to work is using ETFs, or exchange-traded funds.
And you have three different separate accounts, because we're not talking about mutual funds right now. You have a conservative, growth, and aggressive, correct?
That is correct. Our diversified conservative, diversified growth, diversified aggressive, knowing that clients all have all different goals and time horizons and tolerance for risk and liquidity needs.
And recently you did a deal with Schwab, so people can find Windhaven through Schwab.
That's exactly right. If somebody wants to invest using our strategies and have us invest their money, they can go straight to a Schwab financial consultant.
And why did Schwab want you? What kind of performance have you seen? You know, how have you done through the years?
Well, what attracted Schwab is the fact that our strategies over the last 9 years have had quite a bit higher returns than a lot of the benchmarks, but more importantly, with less downside risk. So when the market's falling steeply, on average, we're capturing either half the loss or less. When the markets are going up, we're capturing the lion's share of the gains.
All right, so let's talk about, for example, your aggressive fund right now. Because, look, stock markets are racing forward. Everyone wants to be in it to win it. So what exactly is in the aggressive fund right now in terms of the ETFs? How do you break it down?
So right now, the way we break it down is on the tactical overweighting side, the equities that we are overweighting, the equities that we really like include what you might call U.S. large quality companies. These are companies whose dividends have appreciated consistently over the last several years. We think those are the companies that have the brand names, the franchises. They export to the global growth areas of the world. They have strong balance sheets, and they haven't fully participated in the rally we've seen since March of 2009. We also like emerging markets, but particularly the advanced emerging markets, countries like South Korea, countries like Hong Kong, where they're exposed to the global growth story, they've got world-class exporters, and they're not quite as affected as the weaker emerging market countries that are spending money on food and energy.
And would you play Korea through a Korean ETF? Because
yes,
there's a country ETF. So you would buy the country ETF, but in other cases, maybe you'd buy the region ETF, like in Asia ex-Pacific, if you needed to be a little bit broader?
That's exactly right. So some of our ETFs are country-specific. In some occasions, it's more of a regional base.
And how do you choose the ETFs? Because there's a lot of different ETFs out there. There's leverage ones. There's country ones. I mean, there's some from State Street. There's some from iShares. I know Schwab recently put out their own brand. They also have an ETF list that they have at Schwab. I had actually the guy who runs the list.
That's right.
On the show recently. So how do you choose the best ETF?
Remember when I began investing in ETFs, at the time there was only one in existence, and then there were a few, and then there have been more and more. But the way I focus on the ETFs is, number one, not to think about the universe of 1,000 ETFs, but think about what are the most important asset classes in the world that either protect you on the risk side or give you an opportunity on the return side. The largest, most liquid asset classes. We look at equities, fixed income, hard assets, real estate, currencies across the U.S., Europe, Asia, and emerging markets. Then we recommend that you build portfolios that have an offensive and a defensive component at the same time. And offensively, we're looking to rank what we think are the top 40 asset classes in order of the expected risk-adjusted return. And we will overweight those highly ranked asset classes. And then on the risk side, as we do stress testing of portfolios to determine how bad can a portfolio get hit given a set of different bad circumstances, we'll pick those ETFs that we think will do well when the world turns ugly. And that way we've got a nice balance of some ETFs that are protecting on the downside, some ETFs that we think will appreciate at a rapid rate.
Now, your background is as a mathematician, right? You have
that's
a consultant's
correct.
Background. So that's why it sounds like you're so dedicated to running the correct models and finding the risk in a portfolio.
That's right. The research began over 30 years ago, back when I was a mathematician at MIT, and I analyzed complex systems in science and nature and physics and engineering, the field of system
dynamics. All the stuff that I avoided in college and high school, right?
And what I realized is that it's so hard to predict the behavior of a complex system until you do the hard work and understand those complex relationships. Left MIT, went to Wharton, studied the world of finance, realized that unlike what the industry was practicing and preaching, the global markets are another complex ecosystem of interrelated variables, just like what we studied in the science and physics and engineering world. By applying a lot of the techniques that I learned at MIT, it was a whole new way to approach the market.
Finally, what do you think about the quants out there? I'm talking about the high-frequency traders. Since I have you in here, we've been speaking about Windhaven, but I want to take a quick jump since I have you in here and you're such an expert on mathematical trading. What do you think about the high-frequency traders out there, the dark pools, all the stuff which is scaring a lot of the folks in the market and a lot of the people out of the market?
I remember talking to a software engineer who designed a lot of the algorithms in the high-frequency trading. And he was remarking how they had a big breakthrough because they got the response time down from 40 milliseconds to 30. And that's just a whole different world. That's not a world that humans are competing in. That's machine against machine. On one hand, it does add a lot of liquidity to the trading, and one can take advantage of that liquidity as long as they're not in there competing against these computers. On the other hand, I often worry that if they all come out of the market at the same time, we could have another flash crash. So I think that could be very dangerous.
You're a long-term holder, though, right?
Yes. So we are looking at portfolios that one would hold for the long term. Our conservative portfolio, average time horizon 1 to 5 years, growth 5 to 15 years, aggressive 15 years or more.
Steve Cucchiero, he's the Chief Investment Officer at Windhaven Investment Management. He's now part of Schwab. Thanks for coming on The Real Story.
Thank you very much.
There you have it, another Real Story show in the books. Once again, email me your address and your favorite Real Story guest if you want a book, as well as your favorite replacement song, and tell me why. I'm going to be back on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks again for listening to The Real Story.
At Continental Airlines, we're proud to fly the newest jet fleet among global airlines based in the U.S. State-of-the-art, fuel-efficient planes that beg the question, don't you love that new plane smell? For reservations, go to Continental.com. Continental Airlines. Work hard, fly right.
AT&T works in more places. Whether you're texting directions to a friend, checking email on the go, or calling home from abroad, AT&T is delivering wireless for the way you live, on the go. AT&T is America's wireless leader, with more customers than any other carrier. So live wireless and stay connected to your family, your friends, your world, with wireless from the new AT&T. Your world, delivered.